With Laura Fox.
Podcast. Now, streaming services all offer their own version of what they think we want to watch. And in recent months, they have all been churning out spy thrillers like mad. Black Doves, Prime Target, The Night Agent, Slow Horses, The Day of the Jackal, and so many more. But why? Why are they at this? Well, arts journalist Chris Wazer has looked into it for us, and he is here now. Chris, you're very welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me, Laura.
Well, this is one of my favourite things to talk about, is telly, so okay. I'm absolutely delighted.
Mine too.
You are like across everything, right? But spy thrillers, why do we think that streaming platforms are now like, you're into this, here, let's go?
Well, I think it's a case of, I mean, like television shows and films kind of always reflect the society that we live in. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if it's a time where you've got various shady political figures in charge and governments that you can't trust and all the rest of us, I feel as though like the people in charge of the, you know, dramatic storytelling think, oh, well, I mean, if this is across the news, then people are also going to want to see it in their dramas. And that's kind of always been the case. I mean, look at the amount of dramas that, I mean, during the pandemic, even when we started to see more dramas and more films about people being by themselves. So that's always been the case. Kind of world wars have affected what sort of films we watch, what sort of enemies we're seeing on the small and big screen. So at the minute, for some reason, we're seeing an awful lot of spy stuff. We're seeing an awful lot of political thrillers, and we're seeing an awful lot of shows where you've got all of these diplomats and in terms of, you know, the Day of the Jackal, assassins, and then with Prime Target, you know, college graduates who realize that the world is a dark and murky place and that sometimes the enemies are kind of the people that they're working for. So yeah, there's an awful lot of this stuff at the minute. I can't, however, explain why, when it comes to Netflix, you've got like shows like The Night Agent and The Diplomat. They are extraordinarily popular.
Yeah.
Like the biggest shows in the world. I mean, it's one thing that everyone's watching. It's another when like Netflix continues to renew shows for second or third seasons when we're only on the first one. So they're huge at the minute.
Yeah, so this is all it. How do they differ though, right? Because obviously, you know, we think spies, we think James Bond. We think that like goody and baddie approach. How are the spies in these shows different?
Well, that's true, because James Bond, I mean, despite the fact that, you know, we are working with most of the Le Carré shows that we're watching and the Fleming stuff, like they're written decades ago. But in those old kind of Bond and Le Carré stories, the spies were always the good guys. Mm-hmm. There was always very clear who was good and who was bad. With the new spy stuff, whether it's Day of the Jackal, whether it's, and again, that's based on an old text. It's based on a 70s novel. But the new versions that we're seeing, the good guys do bad things. The good guys kill other guys. And sometimes they have to do things that, you know, are morally corrupt and very, very wrong in order to save the day. So I think that's a big thing where the lines between good and evil have been blurred. And also the people who are the bad guys, they're no longer just, you know, it used to be a case where it was always, oh, the Russians did it. Everyone just pointed the finger at the Russians. Yeah. Whereas now, with shows like The Diplomat, you're saying, oh, the call was coming from inside the house. Oh, it's actually the British who are the enemies. So yeah, the good guys and the bad guys have changed, and the line between them has certainly changed.
Yeah, the murky water there.
Yeah.
What is your theory on why these stories are better as TV shows rather than movies?
Yeah, I think they're better as TV shows because, again, going back to Le Carré novels, going back to Fleming stuff, 2-hour windows, so basically turning them into films, means they were always a little bit stuffed. They were always a little bit rushed. Now, this can be detrimental as well, because with something like The Day of the Jackal, which we'll get into, do you need 10 episodes? I don't think so. But maybe 6 or 8 would have been okay. So taking that sort of novelistic approach and taking your time introducing characters and introducing backstories and kind of, you know, having a bigger setting, having a bigger budget, I think you are, you give the viewer more. And for some reason, we want more at the minute. Although at the same time, I am saying that like spy stories are massive at the moment. Would they be as massive if they were on the big screen? Would people show up in cinemas for them?
I don't know.
I'm not really sure. I mean, recently, so Amazon acquired the rights to Bond.
Yeah.
And that is such a huge deal. And some people are quite upset about it because they're saying, oh, you know, Bond deserves to be on the big screen. But maybe they're seeing that the box office numbers for the last couple of Bond films, people weren't really coming out. More people were talking about Bond than they were going to see Bond.
Yeah.
So it is a case that, you know, people will stay at home to watch these stories. They might not go to the cinema, though.
Okay, fair enough. You've mentioned so many of them there now. You've mentioned The Day of the Jackal numerous times. But let's actually talk about a couple of your favourites. Where are we going to start?
Well, actually, we're going to start with a show that I thought would be one of my favourites, but then kind of ended up disappointing me. So it's Prime Target. And the reason I thought it was going to be one of my favourites is because I am a fan of Leo Woodall at the moment.
Who isn't?
I mean, yeah, for a lot of reasons.
He's across the board.
He is, yeah.
For everyone at the minute.
Brilliant in season 2 of The White Lotus. Terrific in One Day last year. And very, very good in the surprisingly excellent Bridget Jones, Mad About the Boy.
Yeah.
But he, in this series, plays a mathematician. a college graduate at a postgraduate, sorry, student at Oxford or Cambridge even, who is obsessed with prime numbers and is convinced that if he can find this all elusive pattern in prime numbers, he will be able to do anything. I don't really know. There's an awful lot in this show that doesn't really make much sense, but he's looking for a pattern that if he finds it, will help him have access to every computer in the world. So obviously some of his, you know, tutors are like, maybe you shouldn't do that. Maybe that might be dangerous. And of course, there are some people watching him. I mean, he's been surveyed all of the time by the US National Security Agency. And so that sounds like an awful lot of fun.
Yeah.
Maths and spies, let's
right
go
up your street.
Yeah, let's go for it. Unfortunately, it is quite dull. And it's also kind of one of those shows. I mean, I had a tough enough time, you know, describing the plot there. Yeah. When you're watching it, you're thinking to yourself, someone's going to need to explain to me how all of the stuff that Leo Woodall is doing on a chalkboard right now is dangerous in terms of accessing the world's greatest banks. I don't understand the link there.
Nothing makes sense.
No, and the show is not really, and it's sort of, the show kind of treats you a little bit like a child. It's like, maybe trust that we might be able to take some sort of explanation. So yeah, I was very much looking forward to it. Stephen Ray is in there as well, Fraffy, David Morrissey, great cast. It's a bit dull.
Okay. All right, so it's not something you'd be running to go and watch.
Yeah, we can maybe push that one aside.
Okay, that aside. Let's just get it straight on to The Day of the Jackal. You mentioned when you were chatting about it there that this is like a movie from the 70s?
Yes, yeah. Based on a Robert Forsyth novel from 1971, which was adapted into a film in 1973. And again, well, I say again, adapted into a film. Remember The Jackal from 1997? Richard Gere, Bruce Willis?
No.
No, leave it at that. Yeah, leave it at that. It was terrible. But the original story was about an assassin named The Jackal. We didn't know anything about him. That was the point. We just knew that he was an assassin, that every now and then someone would knock at his door or ring his phone and say, we have a new target for you. In the film, his new big target is Charles de Gaulle, the French president.
Okay.
And he doesn't really know why I have to kill this person. So obviously it's a work of fiction. The film was so successful that someone somewhere at some point was going to say, right, let's adapt this into a television show. They've done that with Eddie Redmayne playing the Jackal and Lashana Lynch, who was in the last Bond film, playing this MI6 sniper expert. Okay. Who chases him around the world trying to figure out more about him. The only thing is they've given the Jackal a backstory, which you're kind of like, I don't think we needed one there. And they've given them a family and they've given them a home and they've given them something to lose.
No, we don't want to fall in love with the assassin.
No, exactly.
Stop it.
That's the thing again. It's like, oh, are we supposed to root for this terrible guy who's shooting people from 3,000 meters away? It's because like he is a very good marksman. Eddie Redmayne is not great in this.
Stop. I love Eddie Redmayne.
He's quite vacant. I think that's the point. But there are times where I thought, wake up, dude. It's a bit, you know, and he kind of he kind of looks more like a fashion model than a sniper at times.
Maybe that's why I'd like him now.
it's a bit drawn out. I think one of the biggest problems with this actually is that, and this is going to become a huge problem in spy storytelling, is that the Jackal in The Day of the Jackal, he's supposed to have left no digital footprint whatsoever.
Okay.
There's no traces of him on social media. And I can't help but watch that and think, if I had your job, Jackal, I would be ruined in 30 minutes because I would look up Instagram or I would leave some sort of trace, and it's not realistic. I mean, you're not watching these shows for realism, but at the same time,
sorry Chris, I know that you're talking about the fact you'd be scrolling TikTok or something, and I just imagine you doing a day in the life being like, come with me on an assassination.
I know here's what I had for lunch before I went on the assassination. Yeah,
and then I had to lie down for 4 hours because this guy was really late.
Yeah it took an awful lot out of me.
Maybe that might be the interesting part of it. Cormac and our team never shuts up about Apple TV's slow horses, so much so that we even have a little clip of the intro.
Surrounded by losers, misfits and boozers, hanging by your fingernails.
Now I need to ask you the million dollar question. The intro is quite cool, but are you a fan?
I am,
Okay, good.
Yeah. This is great. I mean, Slow Horses is huge. Nominated for awards. It's got strong viewership figures, but at the same time, not huge in terms of Netflix numbers. And I think that's because it's on Apple TV Plus. Apple TV Plus is one of my favorite streaming services because it has, you know, it's quality over quantity.
Sorry, everything on that is like exactly what you said. The quality of everything they shoot is
absolutely
phenomenal.
Yeah, I mean, they sometimes only put out one or two dramas a month as opposed to, you know, and in terms of, you know, streaming numbers, Netflix and Disney and Prime Video, they're ahead with 200, 250 million. I think Apple TV Plus is around the 50 million mark, which is, you know, it sounds ridiculous to say that that's small, but compared to the others.
Yeah.
But Slow Horses, I mean, it's on its fourth season. It's been renewed for a fifth and sixth season. Keep it going forever. It's actually terrific. And I'm not going to give you a huge, you know, summary of, you know, across four seasons, but I will say for the uninitiated, it's about these bumbling British agents who have messed up on the job, maybe, you know, on their first day or their first year, and as a result have been resigned to Slough House, which is a sort of administrative dumping ground for agents who, you know, who really have done things that they shouldn't have. And I think MI6, they're basically hoping that, you know, look, they'll hate their job so much doing these menial paper pushing tasks, and they'll hate their boss so much. The horrible, horrible Jackson Lamb, played brilliantly by Gary Oldman, that they'll quit. But that doesn't happen because for some reason they keep getting involved in all of these major threats to British security, and they are the ones that keep saving the day.
It's also a pensionable job. Why would you walk away?
Exactly. Yeah. It works as a send up of the spy genre.
Yeah.
But in itself, it's actually as thrilling as the Le Carre, Fleming and Jackal stuff.
Like, okay.
It actually works as a great spy thriller. It also works as a great workplace comedy. And Gary Oldman's terrific in it. Jack Loudon is one of the main stars in it too. Brilliant, brilliant television. It really should be bigger than it is.
This is the first one that I've heard you unanimously just go,
there are some good spy stories.
This is it. Yeah. Let's talk about The Diplomat, because that is hyped up a lot. What did you make of that?
Yeah, it's fine. I mean, it's the sort of...
Chris,
yeah.
That's like saying, that was cute.
It's exactly, yeah. It's interesting. But look, Kerry Russell is brilliant in it, playing this reluctant US diplomat who is appointed to a position in London, doesn't really want the job because she thinks, because it doesn't really involve an awful lot of work at the beginning. She's stuck in a loveless marriage to a guy who would actually love her job, Dahal. He used to be a US diplomat, played by Rufus Sewell, who is very, very good at playing just absolutely irritating, annoying, toxic male figures. But she is actually being tested. She doesn't know this at the beginning, for the US vice president's job. So despite the fact that she might not like it, she has to stay in there. Her appointment also coincides with a British aircraft carrier being attacked on the Persian Gulf.
Oh, God.
And everyone's like, oh, it might be Iran, it might be the Russians. But it's one of those shows, and they actually literally say it in this, I said it at the top, where the call is coming from inside the house.
Okay.
So one of those political thrillers where the good guys figure out that, oh, we might actually be the ones, we might actually be also the bad guys. It's very West Wing like, you know, lots of walking, lots of talking, lots of corridors, lots of times where you might pause it and go, what's going on? Or is there anything going on? Are they just distracting us with way too much chewy dialogue?
Yeah.
It is enjoyable while it's on, but it's also one of those shows that you turn off at the end of the night and go, can't really remember what happened there.
Oh, that's kind of okay though sometimes.
Sometimes.
I want something that's a little bit thrilling but that I'm not going to dream about.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Look, frothy, frivolous, political thriller stuff.
Okay, that's The Diplomat. Yeah. Why are you bunching Black Doves and The Night Agent together?
Because recently, because The Night Agent is one of the most watched series in Netflix history. I think it's like number 5 or 6 in the all-time Netflix chart. And then Black Doves was such a big smash at Christmas, but I have somehow managed to miss both. So I started watching them recently. Probably wouldn't recommend it. You might topple over. You might forget like which characters in which show. But I am having a great time with Black Doves, a show where Keira Knightley and Ben Whishaw, they play spies and assassins in this sort of spies for hire outfit where they are leading kind of double lives, but they're working for this organization led by Sarah Lancashire, where they acquire information from some very powerful people, and then that information is sold to the highest bidder. Sounds confusing. It's really not.
Okay.
And Keira Knightley plays this spy who is married to a guy who might be the next prime minister, and she has a family with him, but he doesn't know that she's a spy. But when the person she's been having an affair with dies, everything unravels again. Probably making this sound more complicated than it is. It's quite enjoyable. She's great in it. Ben Whishaw as an assassin, terrific. Because the whole time, if you close your eyes and you're watching it, you're just like, wow, Paddington Bear's going around killing people. It's very, very strange. But the one thing that it
sorry,
does,
Paddington Bear and Keira Knightley, all I'm thinking is her going, I look quite pretty.
Yeah, look, well, Keira Knightley, Paddington Bear spy film, I'd watch that. But the one thing that is maybe marring my enjoyment of the series just a little bit is the fact that it's Christmas.
Okay.
So, yeah, you are watching it going, don't really want to hear these songs in February, March.
Yeah,
so, yeah, maybe it's one that watch in December just. And the other one, obviously, is The Night Agent, which I'm having an awful lot of fun with. Richard Madden lookalike, Gabriel Basso, playing a person who, when we first meet him, he works for the FBI, saves a train full of people from a bomb explosion, but for some reason is demoted to this kind of office position in the White House. But these guys never really stay in office positions. No. Ends up, you know, discovering that there's a mole in the US government and tries to find out who it is. An awful lot of fun. A little bit kind of diplomat-like, you know? Okay. You're watching it and you're having fun, but the credits roll and you forget all about it.
Fair enough. So. Before I let you go, just back to Black Dolls for a second. Yeah. Is that a you problem that you didn't start watching it in December or...
Yes. Oh,
yeah. So yeah, fair enough.
Yeah.
So
I was enjoying Christmas too much. I was enjoying Christmas, not that I didn't want to see, you know, spies going around killing people.
I mean, it's totally fair.
That is, yeah, yeah. But what I might do is I might either finish it or I might park it until next December.
Okay.
But at the same time, another season is coming. I don't know if that one's going to be set at Christmas, but you could have like a seasonal spy series.
You could.
One set at Easter, one set at Christmas.
It's what everybody wants. Yeah. Chris, thank you so much for coming in with us today. There you have it. Spies are everywhere, or at least there's loads of TV shows about them. Yeah. That was arts journalist Chris Wazer. We will be right back after these.
With Laura Fox. Podcast.